You have to live it and you have to believe in it. Going to work for me is not a job.
Bold businesses.
It's been an interesting learning curve.
Do it on the side.
That's what keeps me up at night.
Do it differently.
It is a bit of a risk.
Mate, it was exciting.
Powered by Vodafone.
Matt Ashwin has been a garden designer for more than two decades. He started because he loved the idea of a job that was outdoors, physical, and working to make things grow. When an accident meant he had to down tools during his recovery, he moved inside to the office. He's still making things grow, but now it's the landscape business Good Manners, in which he became a co-owner in 2008. But being behind a desk is a long way from life on a shovel and comes with an entirely different set of challenges. One of those is managing staff. This is the Bold Businesses podcast, and I'm Cara Waters, Fairfax's small business editor for The Age and Sydney Morning Herald. Today, I'm going to dig into how Matt has segued from building gardens to building good workplace culture, and how he sees HR trends like remote working play out in practice. Later in the show, we'll also bring in Dr. Ben Searle. He's an organisational psychologist who can give us some ideas on how to build staff motivation and well-being in a way that maximises business efficiency. Matt, your firm was founded 30 years ago, but you joined as a co-owner about 10 years ago. What attracted you to Good Manners?
Well, it was a fortunate set of circumstances for where I got injured out at work when I was on the tools. And in the industry, there's not too many people that provide an opportunity to get off the tools and move into an office, but Good Manners was one of those. The two owners at the time sort of, I guess, must have seen something and allowed me to move into the office and take on some very low-level office responsibilities with the construction team. And that gave me a lifeline, really, of staying within the landscaping industry, but moving to a different area of it.
So when you talk about being on the tools, I take it in your industry that's actually having a shovel rather than, for me, would be a pen, I suppose. Now you're managing director. How many people are you responsible for and how has that changed your role?
Yeah, we've got 18 staff now and that's internal, but we're also responsible for upwards of about 60 in total if we include our subcontractors, which, you know, for the way we set up our business, we consider them to be part of our team and part of our business. Obviously, we can't operate without them.
And what sort of size is this business? What sort of turnover does it have?
Just over 6 million at the moment. We're looking to grow a little bit up towards 10.
How are you looking to do that in terms of organic growth or?
Primarily organic, yeah. We're extending our range of services to include some minor building works as well.
And can you briefly explain how the business works with a central office and then lots of different teams out on different jobs?
Yeah, look, Cara, we used to be set up like that with lots of teams out there, but we're now primarily office-based with project management. Around about 4 years ago, we restructured the business from 5 construction teams down to none, ultimately, and shifted that to currently 3 project managers and a project administrator who oversee all our projects and guide and run our subcontractors out there on the site.
And how does having those people out of the office all the time work on a practical level? Do they work remotely?
Our project managers are a combination of outside and inside. What we found when we've really looked at allowing them to work remotely is that they've still wanted to come back to the office to do the management side of works. When they're on site, obviously their mind space is really focused on the construction items of the job and making sure that they're done to the quality that we expect. And they've found that they can't shift that mind space into management responsibilities while they're out on site. Quite often, the contractors are asking them questions and wanting to get direction from them. So even though we had given them iPads and laptops and obviously mobile phones, they have found that they want to come back to the office. Part of that is the resources available to them at the office they don't have when they're out on the site, like the designer and the salesperson and books and different pieces that they require.
So they can talk to the other people in the business and sort of bounce ideas off them. Do you see it as important to keep a connection between the team that's in the office and the ones that are out on site?
Very much so, yeah. We do have at the moment 2 younger guys that work for us that are site-based, an apprentice and a leading hand. We believe it's really important for them to be involved with the rest of us that are, I guess, grouped in the office. So something we've done to sort of help that along is Friday lunch that we have every week where we invite the guys out in the field to come in, and it's 12:30, 1 o'clock. So we might be giving away a couple of hours at the end of the day of producing work on site, but I think the flowback of that is that they're much more engaged in us as a group, and the result being they're better when they're on site ultimately.
And you the cook or you order in?
No, we share it actually. I have been the cook.
That's good.
It's a nice thing for us all to sit around and sometimes talk about work, but sometimes talk about social things, get a bit of a giggle. There's a bit of a competition going on amongst the staff of who's the best cook and whether the food's any good or not any good. But it's, you know, it's a great period to spend a bit of time with each other and a really important part of our business now, actually.
So you went through a business restructure 4 years ago, and there's a couple of things I want to know about that. Did that redefine your idea of what good manners was, and what impact did it have on your thinking about culture and staff?
As far as defining good manners, I think it's for the three of us that own the company, it was a big change for us, especially the two founders of the company had quite a strong concept of what good manners was, and that was a real family where we took on young people and developed them up through the landscaping industry and created great landscapers. You know, it was a big hit to obviously let go of so many people. You know, we were talking of 30, 35 people. It was a real hit to the mindset of us owners. But then just from the staff aspect also, there was a big confidence drop on whether we were a sustainable business going forward. And as it turned out, a couple of years after it, the staff that did stay, most of them have actually moved on. But that's one side of it, obviously, is the staff reason. The other side is us and the transition that we've made to being a different business to what we were then. And potentially those staff may well have been left back in the old mindset.
And how do you change that idea of what a business is about or the sort of culture of it? How do you create it? Do you talk to other design firms or other people in your network?
I think the first thing that we actually did as business owners was decide on what culture we actually wanted. And that was maintaining that family atmosphere, but almost lifting the level of professionalism from being tradesmen to being business people. By that, I mean sort of the financial sides and the operation side. And we're now 4 years after our restructure, really bringing our managers, our higher level managers, into that strategy development so that we are involving the staff more and more and more and allowing that to seep down through the group, that knowledge and that feeling of connection to what we're about.
And does the great team bring the great culture, or does the great culture bring the great team?
Yeah, look, I definitely think the culture's where it starts. It's something that you need to decide what your culture is as a group of people, and every member in the group has an impact on what that culture will turn out to be. And culture is something that's always changing and always evolving, that, you know, if you have a great culture, you're happy spending time together, you're all heading in the right direction, you've got a similar vision, then the teamwork will come from that, I think.
We've been with Good Manners co-owner and managing director Matt Ashwin. After the break, we'll bring organisational psychologist and researcher Ben Searle in to talk about some of his ideas for getting the best out of your people. It's a big transformation from working outside on the tools as a landscaper to being managing director of landscape design firm Good Manners. But that's the path of Matt Ashwin. Matt has met the challenge of running a business and managing staff with the help of Vodafone. As a Vodafone business customer, Matt has access to a range of world-leading business apps, like ServiceMate, that help trades and service businesses get work, complete work, and get paid. ServiceMate enables plumbers, electricians, and similar businesses to provide great customer experiences, increase productivity, improve cash flow, and win more business. To start your journey, search Vodafone Business. We have Dr. Ben Searle with us now. Ben is the New South Wales Chair of the APS College of Organisational Psychology, Senior Lecturer in Organisational Psychology at Macquarie University, and host of his own podcast, Mind on the Job. Thanks for coming in, Ben.
Thanks very much.
I'm interested in how you take a much talked about idea like remote working and apply it in practice. What works and what doesn't when management try and change staff behaviour like Matt has?
Firstly, we know that there are benefits to remote working, but it doesn't work in every situation. What we have to do is we go back to the basic question of why do people work? Beyond the basic issues of salary and what we need to survive, the workplace helps us to satisfy a whole lot of basic psychological needs. Competence, the feeling that you can do things well. Now, it may be that in Matt's case, people may feel that they can't do things as well out on the work sites as they could back in the office. But the other big issue is relatedness needs. People feel a need for social connections with other people. And when people work remotely, they do often start to feel a sense of being disconnected. So people might want to go into the workplace not just to solve a particular problem or to use a particular resource, but because there are people there that they want to see. Some people like to go into the workplace so that they can make a big deal of things that they've accomplished. The flip side of that is that some people can feel that if they aren't there in the workplace showing that they are doing things, they may not be recognised for the contributions they're making.
So it's more complicated than just giving people a laptop, an iPad, a mobile phone and sending them off. What are some of the things or pitfalls you have to look out for when you're trying to set up remote working with your staff?
What we say with any kind of change to an environment is, where do people feel threatened? Where do people feel they might lose something out of this change? What might they gain from the change? And you try and structure your communications around minimising any sense of threat and maximising sense of opportunity.
So Matt's talked about having a particular emphasis on keeping staff who work off-site a lot engaged with what's going back on back in the office. So he brings people back in for lunch. Is that the way to do it, or what are some other tips?
Oh, yes. Now, Matt is doing some fantastic things. So certainly one of the things that I would encourage, so that people don't feel that remote working is taking away that sense of connection, is some sort of regular structured activity where people get together and do things. So Matt is doing a wonderful job with that. Some other things you might need to do is talk to people about how you can maximise their access to some of these other resources that they don't have. So books or expertise or things that they can go to the office to get, which can also be freedom from distractions, that you might need some time and attention to focus on a complicated problem.
Matt, what have you found as, you know, an owner of the business and trying to manage your team? What are the disadvantages of them not actually being right in your eyesight all the time?
I don't think there are too many. I mean, you've got to have trust in your staff. And I think that's where it's point number one when you employ someone, that you've got to trust them. And I do have that trust. We try and provide a pretty flexible environment as far as time goes also, but with the underlying knowledge that we do need to get a job done, and there are timeframes obviously with clients.
And is that the key, Ben, trust? And if so, how do you build that trust?
Trust is really important in these remote working relationships, because in situations where people feel like they will not be trusted to get the work done while they're away, that will amplify the pressure to, I've got to be there so that my boss sees that I'm getting something done. But one of the big challenges with trust is that every step that you make with trust is very tiny. It's something that is built very slowly over time and can be lost very quickly.
Talking about the pressures on staff and trusting them and all that sort of things, there's an issue we've got at the moment is understaffing.
Oh, yeah.
So as much as you can provide a great environment for them and sort of an atmosphere that they can work well in, there's that pressure from being understaffed is something that they really feel on themselves, and it might not be anything that's spoken or necessarily directed at them. But obviously their understanding of where the business is going or what our strategies are, they feel that pressure and they take it on, some quite personally, I think, that at a period where we are understaffed, even though we're sort of looking to find the right people, is how we can help those that are feeling the pressure to maybe not take it on so personally.
We see this a lot in hospitals. So we see occasions when hospitals might have a rush in patients, and then the hospitals might not quite have enough people rostered on to handle all of the additional work. And trying to manage the workload in those situations such that people don't feel like this is something that the organisation has done to us. Mm. Now, the strategy that you're starting to take in the business with that open book management, letting people be involved in discussions of where the organisation is going financially, helping them to see the bigger picture, helps them to see this isn't something that is being done to them. This is something that is happening as a consequence of something good. The other thing is that it's not enough just to say, well, look, we're in difficult financial situations. If people have some reason to anticipate that the effort they're putting in now is going to achieve the goal of a stronger business, a better career path for them, then they're much more likely to take that feedback and to appreciate that what they're dealing with is short-term pain for long-term gain. If you don't do that, that's when people start looking for other places to work.
Matt, you mentioned being quite flexible with your employees with their hours. How do you sort of monitor the hours that they work? Is there any programs you use for that, or any tips that you have?
Yeah, we ultimately run a timesheet type of system that they have to record their time to a job. It's often a job costing program that we have, and that obviously creates timesheets down the track. And we have, you know, the average 38-hour week is sort of the guide, but we don't hold people to that 100%. You know, I think from a staff perspective, they might argue that it's always more than 38 hours. but, you know, I think in the scheme of things, if there's a week that it's less, then it is less. You know, obviously we do maintain a broad eye over the top of it just to, you know, have a general view on it.
Ben, how can business owners know or learn the best way to get the most out of their staff?
Oh, that's a very big question. There are 1,001 things that organisations and managers could do, but if it comes down to, are you enhancing people's personal autonomy? Are you enhancing their capacity to do things well? Are you strengthening those social relationships and sense of trust and respect, then you're probably doing the right thing.
We've been talking with Good Manners co-owner and managing director Matt Ashwin and organisational psychologist Ben Searle. Thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you.
Next episode, we'll be meeting a family who bought their Sydney service station in 1974 and still provide the full service, right down to checking your oil and cleaning the windscreen. We'll find out how they do it, the changes they've seen in their industry, and what being ready for anything means for a local garage. But for now, I'm Cara Waters, and you've been listening to the Bold Businesses podcast, powered by Vodafone. Are you ready?